I'll let you know if that shows up.
Is your recorder ready?
Ready. It is. I don't know if it's live or not.
Is it?
I can't, just can't tell right now. I don't know why. I'll look real quick. Madison Plains. It could be, and I just don't see it, Chad. Usually I get a notification, I didn't get one. Yeah, you don't see it either, do you?
No, I don't see it.
Mm-mm. I thought it was me.
Like, I'm not getting an alert or anything.
Mm-mm. I was getting an alert, too. Is it going live?
This
good.
Says, I've got a little
live?
Box up in
okay.
The left-hand corner. It says live.
Yep, right on.
The Madison Plains Board of Education special meeting. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Anikas.
Here.
Mrs. Bowie.
Here.
Mr. Mason.
Here.
Ms. Reinschel. Mr. Stonegrove. Mr. Eisner and I are also here.
Okay, so for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We don't have anybody signed up for public communication, so we will move straight into board work session. Mr. Eisler.
Thank you, Madam President, and members of the board. Good evening. It is good to be with you tonight. We have called a special meeting this evening for two purposes. One is to discuss COVID protocols that we will put in place for the coming year, and also to do a little bit of hiring that still needs to be done before the school year begins. And so what I would like to do, with the permission of the board at this time, is just talk a little bit about the COVID protocols that I am recommending to the board that we put in place for the school year. I have sent a document to the board. This document is going to, if provided the board approves it, and even if you make changes, my intent is tomorrow to put this in a letter that will go out to our parents and our guardians, so that our staff, so that they are aware of the direction that we're going to go here with the school year. And that is, of course, provided that things do not change. One of the things that seems to happen here, or seems to be happening during the pandemic, is that things sometimes seem to change rather quickly, and we need to make some adjustments. And so certainly to begin the year, the recommendations that I have here are what I would recommend to the board. Ultimately, you know, I'll let you guys decide if you want to make changes or not. But if you would, I'll talk through the document just a little bit and give you a little bit of an overview so that we know where we stand.
Are you going to present it or no?
I wasn't going to. I don't have the ability to do that. I guess I could. It would take me a couple minutes to get up.
It's okay.
To get up on the screen. So so the very first piece, and I think the piece of information that is perhaps most pressing on the hearts and the minds of our students and on our parents and our guardians and on our staff, is what we intend to do with regard to face coverings in classrooms. At this point in time, there is not a mandate in place that would require that in classrooms and in the buildings and on campus. The major health organizations are strongly recommending that students and staff wear masks in the building and on campus. But it does seem to me that our community, based upon conversations that I've had and conversations that I've heard about, it seems that the majority of our community members seem to feel pretty strongly that they do not want masks to be required. They would like them to be optional in the buildings. And so in the document that I have, that is what it says. It says face coverings are currently encouraged but not required in buildings and on grounds. And so that would be the recommendation that I would make to the board at this point in time. However, the CDC has made a mandate, they're a federal organization, they have made a mandate that masks be required on public transportation, school buses included. I have spoken with a number of superintendents in the area, both superintendents in the county, and I've spoken with superintendents in other counties that neighbor us. And at this juncture, with the superintendents that I have spoken with, all of them have indicated to me that they are intending to go the same direction we are, and that is to make masks optional in the classroom and in buildings, but mandatory on buses. I have also spoken with legal counsel about this as well, because I wanted to get their opinion. And legal counsel's opinion is that we should follow the CDC mandate and require masks to be worn by students and staff on buses. And so I have spent a significant amount of time looking into this, and it is something that I believe that we do, and I know we have community members who will not be pleased with this, but it is something that I believe that we need to do. The good news for the community at this point in time is that they are not required in classrooms or in buildings, so we will encourage them there in classrooms and buildings, but we will require them on school transportation. With regard to quarantines, quarantines are still something that will be in effect. There's just no way around it. I mean, if students, under the right circumstances, if students are exposed, there will be quarantines that will have to go into effect, and that will be true for staff as well. And so at this moment, the guidance and what I would recommend to the board is that we follow the quarantine guidelines that have been given to us by the Madison County Public Health Department. So that part is in there as well. There is a section in the document regarding social distancing, and what I have written is that we will work to do everything that we can to spread our students out as much as possible within the classrooms. And within the building, to the extent that the physical parameters, the infrastructure of the building will allow. That is, at this point in time, that is the very best that we can do. I believe with having all of our students here, in many instances, we will be in many, not all, but in many instances, students will be able to be 3 feet apart, which is the distance that is required for the quarantining piece, if masks are worn. That is something that we will be able to, in many instances, be able to meet. The biggest place where that is going to be problematic is in the cafeterias at lunch. We just don't have the physical space to be able to spread people out. And so in the cafeterias at lunchtime, that is going to be a problem. But with regard to the rest of the buildings, we will do what we can to try to keep students 3 feet apart. But again, even in the rest of the building, we have old buildings, we've got some old classrooms. We are not going to be able to keep everybody 3 feet apart in every instance, but we will do what we can. There is a reference here to full-time virtual learning. The state has gotten rid of the language about where it allows remote learning full-time for the school year. Instead, what they have done is they have adopted some language around blended learning and online learning. And that may sound like semantics, I think, to, not with blended learning, but with the online learning a little bit, it is. But there are some rules and regulations around online learning. Part of that involves us setting up a separate IRN number, an information retrieval number through ODE. We have to, in a sense, create a school within a school. But there is a part of me that would like to see us do this. I think there are some parents and some staff or some students in our community that would like to be able to take advantage of it. And I think there might be some applications for us on down the road with it as well. That is something that we can have a conversation about as a group at another time. I don't think we need to go down that path necessarily this evening, but if you want to, we can. But I do believe that setting up the online school is something that might be in our best interest and provide an avenue for students. And speaking with legal counsel earlier this week, a lot of the other parameters that will encompass the online learning piece, the minimum standards have not been established yet by ODE. They don't have them. So we do expect that those will be coming sometime in the near future. But this was legislation that was passed in the budget bill, which was passed at the end of June. End of July. We don't have this information, and not all the information is known yet in terms of all of the guidance, but we certainly will do what we can. In terms of contingency plans in the event of a full or partial closures for in-person learning, my intent would be, depending upon what happens with that we would move either into a hybrid model, or if we have to go fully remote, we would, and at that point in time, we would simply make use of the digital platforms that we have in the district right now. We have some different options. Google Classroom would be a large part of that, but I know we have done some purchasing of some other platforms to help students learn, and the MPVS, or the Florida Virtual School that we have, is still in the district as well, and depending upon what the scenario was, we could go down that path also. So there are some things available for us to do that. In terms of prevention strategies and other information, just want to remind people that daily self-monitoring is still important. We want students to stay home if they have a fever of 100 degrees or higher. Practice personal hygiene, including covering a cough, washing hands, and staying home when sick, and assessing symptoms of COVID appropriately. So if you have one of those typical COVID symptoms, cough, shortness of breath, difficulty breathing, sore throat, headache, loss of taste or smell, GI issues or chills, those are things that we need to get checked out by a doctor. We will continue cleaning and disinfecting as best we can. We did that last year. We will work to do the best we can with that this year. In terms of food service, we may have to have students have assigned seating in the cafeteria so that if we have to go down the path of identifying contact tracing, you know, people who were within 3 feet, we may have to do that as well. So that will be there. Lunches will still be available free of charge to students through the USDA program that is there. So that is something that, with regard to food service, we'll be able to take, our students and our families will still be able to take advantage of. With regard to transportation, seating charts will need to be used, obviously, there as well in case contact tracing were to ensue. We are short on bus drivers. We will not be able to, you know, have just two people per seat. There will be instances where there will be, particularly with some of the little ones, there will be three people per seat in some scenarios. But we have worked to try to find bus drivers, and it's been very, very difficult. So with regard to that, that's how we will proceed. And then with regard to extracurricular and athletic activities, we still intend at this point in time to allow parents and family members to attend those events so that they can watch their children or their brothers and sisters playing in events. So that is something that's still on the table. The one thing, one other item that is there, I've included an item that is very, very similar to some of the permissions that the board gives the superintendent and treasurer at the beginning of every year. And basically, this is just giving me authority. I'm asking the board to give me authority that, because things do sometimes happen very quickly with regard to this, decisions mm-hmm. need to be made quickly. And obviously, we have a regular meeting once a month. I'm asking the board for permission and for authority to be able to make decisions with regard to these protocols so that I can make changes to best meet the needs of students and our families in the learning environment. And then the decisions that I ultimately make, if I make significant changes here, I would bring that then to the board at the next regular meeting to ratify that decision. So, but that is, again, very similar to some of the permissions that the board gives the superintendent treasurer at the beginning of the year. I just have a note here at the end that it is the sincere hope of the district that we will be able to remain fully open at 100% capacity for in-person learning for the duration of the school year. However, if conditions change or orders are issued that require Madison Plains Local School District to change learning models from fully in-person, the district will do everything it can to provide the very best learning experiences possible for the students. The district continues to learn from the experiences throughout the pandemic and it strives to provide the best experience possible regardless of the learning model being utilized. So that is the overview of the document that I've sent. And again, this evening, with the board's approval, if the board approves the document, my intent tomorrow is to put this into letter form and send it to our students and our parents and our guardians and our staff so that they're aware that this is what we intend to do. So with that, I am open to questions. And again, my understanding is that the lion's share of this, 90% of it, the vast majority of the districts around us, both in the county and contiguous to us in other counties, and even some of the schools in the other counties as well that are not contiguous, this is the direction that they are going. I know as you head into Franklin County, that begins to change, but for the schools out this direction, this is the direction that the majority of them seem to go, and I know that just from conversation with superintendents and with legal counsel. So,
I have a couple. Are we aware of any students that want to do virtual learning this year?
We, from surveys that we did back in the spring and the early summer, there were a few that had indicated that they would. The numbers are not large. Of course, once this is made aware, or once the public is aware of this, there may be a few more that want to take advantage of that. But at this time, the numbers are relatively small.
In the areas in which we do not have the 3 to 6 feet of distancing, are we planning on using the clear dividers?
At this point in time, we're not. We've been led to believe that really those, we've been told that those really are not terribly effective at slowing spread. We do have some that are left over. Many of them were damaged throughout the course of the year last year. So those have been disassembled and the parts, thrown out that were broken. But we do still have some in the district. So if the board's desire is to try to bring those back, we certainly can. But that will take some effort on our maintenance department to be able to do that. But we've been led to believe that they are not terribly effective.
Are we doing contract tracing, like for classrooms, so if you would get a positive test, like would the whole classroom would quarantine?
Well, so that goes back to the quarantine rules.
Right.
So if you, and there was a little bit of discussion happening at the right. state level at this point in time about how that is exactly going to work. State has published some documents and being told that there may be some changes coming to those documents that were published. But at this point in time, and Mr. Cook, if you want to correct me if I'm wrong, please do so. But basically, the way it would work is if a student is within, if they've not been within 3 feet of the case, and they have been wearing a mask, and this, they at this point in time, they would not need to quarantine. So if they were not within 3 feet, and if they were wearing a mask, and if these other protective actions that we have listed here are in place, they would not need a quarantine. If they've been within 3 feet, or if they were not wearing a mask, then they would. Now, the one change that may come from the state is that there is a possibility that if both the case and the person exposed were not wearing a mask, then the person exposed may have to quarantine. So then it would be both of them would have to have been wearing a mask. But the way the language reads right now from the state, it's just the person who is exposed. We're being told that that may change. Did I say that accurately?
Superintendent, you know this as well as I do. Well done.
Thank you, sir.
You should probably tell people that he's here.
Oh, and I'm sorry. Yes, for those For those who are watching at home, Mr. Chris Cook, the County Commissioner for the Madison County Public Health Department, is with us in the audience at the request of the board and myself this evening. So happy to have you with us. Thank you, sir.
I do have a question for Mr. Cook. It's all about the data, and so there's multiple questions within my question.
Yeah, put him in a microphone.
Yeah.
If you want to turn that on, or...
Is it on?
It should be, just so they can hear you on the...
Okay, so my questions are around data. What does the data look like for Madison County specifically? The number of cases we may have, is it mostly Delta? Is it Delta and Alpha variants? Are you seeing something different? Also a breakdown of like age groups. When we see these different numbers, what age groups are we falling in? Hospitalizations, all that information. Do you have that? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I would assume that you may have some data around, yeah, there's a light, around information like that.
Sure. So, President Zinkas, I'm happy to provide the information that I have with me today, but I don't have all of that data that you requested. I'm happy to get it to you, though.
That's fine.
So I did look today, I look every day at the data. I can tell you what we're seeing this week here in Madison County.
That'll be good.
And I do want to preface that with, at one point in time here in Ohio, I think you're familiar, we had what was called the Ohio Public Health Advisory System, that beautiful color-coded map that
you
either loved or hated, right?
Yeah.
But did produce good data. Those 7 data indicators were excellent metrics for us. Now, again, take the color out of it, because some people got really riled up about colors. Let's take that out. But the data was good. Unfortunately, that has been mothballed. That is no longer in effect. But the CDC, it's been replaced with something the CDC has put in place, and it's the county-level data tracking.
Okay.
If you Google search for CDC county COVID data, you'll pull up a chart. And again, sorry for those who don't like color-coded things. It is color-coded. And it does go down to the county level at every single state. And there are 4 different levels. Right now, Madison County, just this week, we turned to high, which is red. Sorry for the color again. But that is the highest level of community spread on their data tracking system. Madison County, for the last about 5 days, we were orange, which is one step down from the red, which is significant or consequential spread. We have shifted to red. Frankly, if you look at that map, most of the United States is turned red. You can actually view a time lapse on this data tracker. You can see how it has moved from west to east, and you've seen that increase in community transmission just occur over the last few weeks. So to your question about Delta, I would love to have that county-level data. We don't. In fact, the State Department of Health, they're the ones that send those samples off to be serotyped to find out exactly what strain it is. That process takes about 3 weeks. So all the data we have now on the serotypes and the strains that are out there is 3 weeks old. So if you've heard Dr. Vanderhoff at the state level talk about, percentages in Ohio of cases that are Delta, he always prefaces it with saying, just imagine right now, if there's a positive case in Ohio, it's Delta. But the vast majority, if not all, not only across Ohio, but also in Madison County, are the Delta strain right now.
Okay.
Just looking, and give you a couple numbers. So just looking at numbers so far this week, we have been in a good spot for quite a while here in Madison County. If you pay attention to our website, we do a week-by-week tracker of the number of cases. We have monthly totals, all kinds of good data to dive into if you like that stuff. But what we've seen over the last 5 weeks is a week after week after week increase. So right now, so far this week to date, through when I pulled the data, it was about 2 o'clock this afternoon here on a Wednesday. We had 28 cases so far. Now going back, and again, that's just 3 days into the week so far, going back the previous weeks, we were at 20, 10, 6, 5, and 3. So you can see what's happened over the last 5 weeks. It's increasing significantly. And we're just 3 days. And we're on pace for 50 cases minimum this week, if we kind of extrapolate out the days we've got left this week. And that's why we're at high in that red color on the CDC's tracker. Ages. I didn't do like mean, median, or mode on those ages, but I did look, just looking across it very quickly before I came to this meeting. I saw a range from 5 to 87. So we are still seeing a range of cases. Vast majority still are those who are unvaccinated, but we are seeing some breakthrough cases, people who are fully vaccinated that are getting sick. The good news about that, though, is as far as I'm aware, we haven't had anyone, well, I take it back, we've had one case in the last week. It was a breakthrough case that was hospitalized. Otherwise, the people who are fully vaccinated who are still being infected have mild to moderate symptoms, which is a strength of the vaccine. We never said the vaccine was going to prevent all cases, just like the flu. It reduces the symptoms and severity, so you don't end up in the hospital or, heaven forbid, dying from COVID. So great vaccines, still encourage it for everybody that can get it. But obviously here in the population schools, we have a section of the population that can't get it. In our K-6 generally, can't get that vaccine yet. So hopefully that provides you a little information. The other couple of numbers that I do have for you, just to, I know you didn't ask about vaccinations, but I do want to share.
That was going to be my next question.
He read your mind already.
Yes.
So vaccination rates. I don't have it granular down to the zip code, and frankly, I'm not sure how helpful that would be. You know the way zip codes are across this county. London looks like almost three-fourths of the county, right?
Yeah.
So what I can tell you is countywide data. So the age range of 12 to 14, as of today, 21% of our kids aged 12 to 14 were fully vaccinated against COVID in Madison County.
Okay.
Now, if you take that age 15 to 19, it's 35%. I can tell you the last 2 weeks, 3 out of every 4 people that came into our office to get vaccine was school age. Now, there's other reasons they're coming in, back to school, regular, you know, childhood immunizations. They're coming there like, hey, well, I'm here, let's just go ahead and do the COVID vaccine. But the vast majority of people that are seeking vaccine from us right now in Madison County are the school age, which is really encouraging to me.
Yeah.
So, did I hit all your questions?
Yes, yes, okay. You did. Thank you.
What adult percentage of vaccinated people do we have in Madison County?
Sure. So, age 60 and over, we have 78% of the population fully vaccinated. And then it just drops off after that.
Okay. What's your goal? What is the goal? I mean, the goal is maybe always 100%, but what's the real, like, what's a realistic goal?
My goal, honestly, it is realistic to think of percentages across the entire population of 70%. I know at the federal, state, and local level, that's what we keep hearing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's necessarily a number that we have to hit with fully vaccinated, because I will tell you, the people who have natural or who have infection acquired immunity, who have had COVID, they do have some protection, and I don't discount that. I think that has to go into the equation somehow. Mm-hmm. I can't quantify that because I don't know how long those people have antibodies. CDC continues to say no more than 3 months. Some studies, especially out of Cleveland, have shown that it's probably a little longer than that. I would agree with that. So when you're looking at whole community immunity, I think there are two things we have to look at. It's the percentage vaccinated and those that have gotten COVID and decided not to get vaccinated, mm-hmm. right? So those are the people, you can't double count the people who are vaccinated and have COVID. And I've done some of those numbers to try to look at the people that only were infected, never got the vaccine, and how does that play into the entire community?
I'm just interested in how you get your, like, so let's just say mandates change. Things change all the time, right? Every day. So how do those mandates trickle down to you? Like, I know they come from the federal level, then there's state, and are they just different, or how do they get to your level, or how does that work so people understand it?
Sure, that's a really good question. So just thinking about the mandate that you have talked about here tonight, about that CDC mandate for the transportation, public transportation,
right.
That is one that, I mean, you are not alone at acknowledging that is in place. I think everyone understands it at this point. Public transportation, whether it's planes, trains, or automobiles, right? That's a requirement. So that's one that it comes from the federal level, we all know. Now, when it comes to other mandates, Ohio is a home rule state. So at the local level, we can be more restrictive, not less restrictive than anything that's in place at the state level. So when mandates do come down, I would say most of the time we adopt those from the state level. But if things are not quite right for us here in Madison County, if we feel that the situation, the environment in Madison County calls for something different, as you said, when you go a little east, things aren't quite the same in Franklin County. And they put things in place that are correct for that county. So we do still kind of reserve that ability to look what's happening locally. We have more granular data at the local level to be able to make decisions that's best for our residents in Madison County.
Okay.
talk about the people in Madison County that have it. Talking about school-age kids, what type of symptoms, severity, hospitalizations are you seeing for kids that, school-age kids, kind of the environment we're looking at, that are going to, that get COVID? What kind of symptoms are they?
Good question, Deb. I actually discussed that with my medical director, Dr. Carr, this week. And we are both looking for data specifically on what's going on with the Delta variant. Because the Delta variant is different. We can't look at what happened last year with kids and with the original strain and the Alpha, and now compare it directly to Delta. So there's still a lot of data gathering going on right now with how it's affecting those kids. But there are reports all across Ohio, other states that Mayor mentioned that were hit by Delta first as it's kind of progressed, you know, from west to east across the United States. They're showing that that data is reflective of more severe illness in across all age groups, so not just the school age. But generally, we know that kids do better as far as severe symptoms than adults do. There are a lot of risk factors that go into that, obesity being one, obviously, we all know about, and it's been in existence for some time since back to the original strain. There are several other things that can affect kids, but I can tell you, last year we had 3 cases of multi-system inflammatory illness here. It is it's what happens when a child's body kind of goes haywire in response to a COVID-19 infection. We had 3 of those cases. They were all hospitalized, and they're all still on the road to recovery at this point. But generally speaking, what we've seen with the original strain and the Alpha, symptoms in children are much more mild. There are less chance of hospitalizations. But again, as we're seeing Delta spread across, we are seeing increased hospitalizations and severe illness for children of school age.
One of the things that, as I've been listening to the news, I've been hearing about the Epsilon and Gamma strains that are allegedly coming. Can you share anything with us about those?
I don't have any better data for you than honestly what you've seen on the news at this point.
Thank you.
Just to help me understand the severity, the 3 serious cases of kids.
Yes.
Just out of curiosity, so in a pre-COVID, would kids get the flu and get sick at any serious levels of flu? 3 cases happened before then. They're just trying to compare pre-COVID, something we can try to understand, like the flu and COVID.
I think everybody wants to try to compare it to something, and unfortunately, again, you may not like the answer, COVID isn't comparable to other things in that sense. But absolutely, there are other vaccine-preventable illnesses like influenza that do put kids in the hospital as well. The problem and the difference is there are treatments that are proven to be effective, antiviral drugs for those flu cases. We don't have those types of treatments yet for COVID. I was just discussing with someone today. Last year at this time, last summer before school started, I was talking to someone. I said, by this time this year, we'll have vaccine and we'll have better treatments. We got vaccine, but we don't really have very good treatments. I mean, one of the great factors is, we've got some things that are in the works, they're experimental, but they aren't proven like antiviral drugs for influenza that people can treat with their
minds. Thank you.
Is there anything else we should be considering or doing that we're not doing today?
I don't think I can share anything different with you
than I've
shared already. You've seen my recommendations, you've read my press releases, you've gotten that information from me. Even since I've written that, the cases have increased and they're going to continue increasing. I think we need to be very vigilant in our classrooms because without masking, we can have an outbreak that, like you described, can take out a classroom very quickly, whether it's a quarantine or everyone just flat out getting sick. So I think we have to be very, very careful of that because I think our, especially that K-6 group, it's a tinder bundle. And we get the right spark there, and we're going to have a problem sharing it.
Okay.
Yes.
Is it safe to say that we're in a better spot this year than we were this time last year as far as infection, vaccination, and preparedness?
For the vaccinated, yes. For the unvaccinated, no. I think we're worse. Because you have a concentrated group of the population in K-6 under age 12, that is the most vulnerable. They are more vulnerable than they were last year because we have a strain that is far more virulent and contagious than we did at this time last year. And frankly, we don't have a lot of masks. So I think for that group, we're in a worse spot.
Thank you. Thank you for coming this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I just had a few more points. One, I wanted to say thank you for calling this meeting. You know, we have a meeting next Tuesday, but communication, I think, is the key for our families. I'm glad you're putting out that paperwork. We want to get the word out as much as we can. The word's unmasking, but also on quarantining, so people, we don't want our people to be surprised, you know, when the quarantine call comes to them, or whatever, as much as we can be. And we talked about the whole classroom potentially being shut down. I think we've been pretty clear on the value we see in in-person education
for our
kids. We believe that's a high-quality education that's best for their reading abilities, their social skills, whatever it may be. So the more we can do things to keep them in person as much as we can, I believe that's where we're at as a board, pushing that. So I think whatever steps you can take to help quarantine, if there is a case, keeping them as far apart as we can, because what I don't want is, de facto having to shut down because of how much quarantine we have.
Yeah.
So Chad and I have talked about this, but the most we can possibly keep them apart, so if we do have cases, which I'm sure we will, that we minimize how many people have to quarantine for that. So I appreciate you running through that stuff, because that's my biggest concern, is that we keep the kids in school, in-person education.
I think it's better for their mental health and well-being too, right? So, and you've done a good job of keeping that, like checking in on that with those children that, would have those issues. So I think that's good. That's a certainly concern if they're not here, that I think that everybody saw last year, which is not good. So we want them here for sure.
Working hard to try to keep them here. I mean, we're doing, in conversations with our administrative team, we're doing everything that we can to try to
make
the best of it. So,
thank you.
We share the same belief. I mean, we want them here too.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Okay. Ready to move on? So, no approval of board minutes, no student recognition or employee recognition, no department reports, no superintendent committee reports, and no treasurer's report. So that brings us to the superintendent's report.
Madam President, the material that we covered in the board work session is largely just what I wanted to mention there.
Yeah.
So I will work to get this information out to our parent, provided the board approves it in due time here. I will work to get this information out to our parents and guardians tomorrow and our staff, and I'm sure we'll share with our students too. So.
Thank you. No policy and governance, so we're going to move right into business.
Madam President, I make a motion that upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board approve business items L2.
Second.
Discussion.
I just say thanks again, Chris, for coming and helping us. I think that's good information for us to have and understand, and I appreciate it.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Nikas?
Yes.
Motion carries 3-0.
Is there another one? Yes. Madam President, I make a motion that upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board approve the COVID-19 protocols for the 2021-2022 academic year as presented.
Second.
Discussion. Roll call, please.
Is
that the one I just did?
Yeah.
L2?
That's right. And I will take responsibility for that.
That's okay.
Apologies. When
it's the next. I thought that was. Did I say, is that right? Okay, I can read a different one. It's fine.
That was part of.
We'll go to personnel, I think.
Okay.
Yes.
To personnel.
Thank you.
Yes. Now you can make the motion.
No, now I can do that one. Did you want to talk about personnel before we.
Just obviously we have been busy hiring. I counted up today. We have hired, if you include a couple of classified staff members, since the summer began, we have hired 29 new people. And we have a number of other staff members who have transitioned into new positions. But 29. So it has been a very, very busy summer, and I need to give a shout out to my administrative team. Karen Grigsby did an awful lot of work with this. Kim LaGault was obviously involved, and other people too. But we have been very, very busy hiring, so grateful to have been able to get the people we did, and we do believe that we've got some good ones. So very excited.
Thank you, Karen.
So,
thank you. Thank you. Madam President, I make a motion that upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board approve personnel items M2 through M8.
Second.
Discussion. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Boyd?
Yes.
Mr. Mesa?
Yes.
Mrs. Davis?
Yes.
Motion carries 3-0.
We have no donations and no new business, and we do not have an executive session this evening. So in closing, our next meeting is this coming Tuesday, August 17th.
Yes. Madam President, I make a motion that we adjourn the meeting at 6:40 p.m.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Boyd?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Davis?
Yes.
Thank
you.
Thank you. Oh, I don't think my microphone was on. I don't think it was working.
I don't know if my microphone was working either.
Well, to be honest,
you want to turn it
well, we're not even streaming.